Welcome back to the Audio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week our guest is Anna Doble, digital editor of the BBC World Service. We talked about her role and the new visualization of some of their Witness History series on YouTube using generative AI animation. But first, I asked Anna to tell me what her role entails and what is a digital editor.
Question. I've been doing roles with a name of that nature for about, I don't know, 10 to 15 years, and it's evolved constantly. So it started off sort of websites and things, as you'd imagine. And nowadays, it's far more about creating social media content, video. But I would say the easiest way to say it quickly, if someone asks me in the lift, is because I work at World Service, and that's the English language radio parts of World Service. I see my job as ensuring we find visual routes to audio, things that start their life as a podcast, things that start their life as a piece of radio. I work out with a team of people who specialize in social content and video making, how to make that content travel so that it's not just radio people who know about it and hear it and love it, but people that maybe don't know what the World Service does will encounter it, perhaps a short form, perhaps as visualized audio on YouTube. So it's finding routes to market that engage young people, international audiences, people that maybe don't have a long habit of listening to the radio.
Well, this is it. It's a massive area of audio now, and it's expanding and it's growing all the time. The visualization of radio, the visualization of podcasts, and that's a whole other debate. But making sure the visuals, the social content to the audio is really important. How big of a challenge is that for the World Service, where the content is in English, but that's not the first language of many of your listeners?
Yeah, great question, because we've seen in our data that people use World Service English to learn English. And that's great. And that is hopefully because we have a long legacy of speaking the truth and speaking it clearly. But it is interesting to see how, for example, when we use a third party like YouTube, how subtitles really come to the fore. So we can, you know, see that audiences will come to us and watch an English language visual podcast, but switch on, say, the Hindi subtitles or...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And yeah, it must be said that YouTube has a particularly good, versatile bit of functionality that means we input in English and then it can output in a chosen language. Obviously, we spot check that, and we've worked with our amazing languages colleagues to make sure it's not gibberish in Hindi or Swahili or Spanish.
Or twisting the original content as well, but, and the nature of that.
Well, that's hugely important to us. But I have to say, over the time we've been trialing it, using it, so we've been visualizing podcasts actually since 2018, when people looked at me askance, like, why are you trying that?
What's that all about?
So we've tried all sorts of techniques, from kind of animation where we've drawn it, you know, frame by frame using an animator, wonderful but very expensive, to using templates, so kind of creating a kind of a pleasant sort of, I always say, sort of lava lamp experience of moving things and patterns and pleasantness, so that someone can both listen and watch, but that the watching doesn't distract from the listening. Whereas nowadays there's a massive trend, and we're seeing a huge investment in sort of in-studio cameras where you just see who's speaking, but it's still radio because we've got our headphones on, we've got microphones. It's traveled a long way, and I've enjoyed the journey. And in a sense, the creative time was that kind of, how do we animate? Should we try and create sort of repeat images that floats across the audio? Should we actually show the audience the waveform? You know, all these things. But going back to your question about language, yes, we really do want to be a very helpful place for people whose first language is not English, but who are maybe wanting to learn about science, history, business, the news, and can use World Service content that's both audio and visual together to learn English.
So let's talk about Witness History then, specifically. Before we get into how you've put this out onto YouTube, tell us about the kind of subjects that you would get in a series of Witness History. What does it deal with?
I must say, I really love Witness History because It's so simple in its concept, really, and that's that anything more than 10 years ago, I'm afraid to say, listeners and viewers, is history. So,
yeah.
It's a show that makes most of us really feel old very quickly. Even teenagers can feel old because they're talking about the toys or something that they once played with. So it's just really fun. So it can swing from something incredibly serious. We had a recent hit actually explaining who the Ayatollah was that reached 10.4 million views on Facebook, obviously for obvious reasons in the current climate. But then we've done wonderful things that are more playful, like on the list of those we've been animating is the history of the Labradoodle.
I loved that one. I watched that one and it was so fascinating, but charming as well. And we'll come on to that with the animation. And they're quite short. They're about 9 minutes long, aren't they?
So they're short, succinct. They're very, very, I think, bingeable, if we want to use that word, because, you know, if you're going on a flight or something and you just want something to sort of, you know, kind of fill in the gaps, there's so many great little stories told so well. So as well as the sort of anything over 10 years is history rule, all the episodes, as you'd imagine from the title, have audio or interview with a witness, somebody who lived through it or had some integral role in some aspects of the story. And the team who make it are just so creative. And I ought to sneak into the back of their brainstorms because once some, you know, overhear someone suggesting, I don't know, the history of some huge geopolitical event, and then over there someone saying, let's do the Furby. You know, do you know what I mean? I want to be in that conversation. But I work with them to help them reach the digital audiences, and they're very, very good at it. And it actually has a sister title called Sporting Witness, which does similar sort of weird and wonderful takes on great moments from sport.
It is a massive area that they can choose from, isn't it?
I think is
great, because sometimes you think to yourself, oh, history, oh, that's going to be a bit dry, but it isn't at all. Like I said, the Labradoodle one was so playful and so charming. Let's talk about these five animated video adaptations then of recent episodes. They've been released on YouTube. This is a first for the World Service in as much as it's used generative AI tech to make the animations. How did the project come about? Because you've worked with 1UP Media on this. How did that all come about and that collaboration?
Well, one thing we've all wanted to do for a long time and have been doing is, of course, creating visual routes to audio. And animation has been a part of our sort of test phase, going back quite a while. Animation is wonderful. And I love working with animators and illustrators. It is also really expensive. So there is absolutely no way I could say to the controller of World Service, is it okay if I pay for an animator to visualize all these great episodes of a radio program such as Witness History? Unfortunately, it just would not happen. So those things would stay as audio only. As we've been chatting, we've been looking at all the different ways we can put audio into a more visual space through different techniques, some of it quite easy to do, some of it very hard to do. 1UP Media approached us via our colleagues. We have an area of World Service where we reach out to work with different partners around the world, business development, and they help foster relationships with, you know, combination of media partners, but also sometimes new creatives and animators would fall into that. And this company had been trialing, and I've been looking at their other sort of portfolio. They particularly work with narrative audio podcasts to create visual content. And it is for podcast creators who have got no capacity to shoot an edit or to bring in an animator. So it's particularly to bring to life storytelling podcasts. And so we were given the opportunity through that connection to try it out. The very first of the batch earlier on, it was a year ago, was actually very much relevant to the material. So it was about the woman who was the first female lead at DC Comics. Fans of graphic novels and animation will be all over this, but for us, it was a chance to use, I guess, a graphic treatment to tell a story about graphic novels or the creation of probably the most iconic brand in comics, right? So that was about Jeanette Kahn, and it was absolutely just a pilot to see what was possible. What 1UP Media do is they use AI to create backgrounds. So I guess, again, any animators watching and listening will know that it's about kind of the works involved in creating repeat frames of the backdrop so that the action can take place in the foreground. I do apologize to those that would actually have the real terminology for these kinds of, I guess, the way that frame by frame you build up movement. This company we work with to try this uses AI to create the backdrop And then they use human animators and work with obviously us to tell the story in the foreground. 9 minutes, therefore, is actually really quite a long time in animation. It's quite a short piece of audio. So it was a good thing to trial it with rather than a, you know, half hour piece or an hour long podcast app. So yeah, and I think because we started with the DC Comics one, it just felt really appropriate to the material, hearing about her journey to become, you know, kind of an iconic name in that sphere. And of course, all the superhero characters that came from DC Comics, seeing them hand-drawn or seeing them in animated form, it felt right.
So how did you choose these particular episodes to be the ones that were used on YouTube with this?
Yeah,
with this
good question. Yeah. I will say that the brilliant team at Witness History, a guy I work with, Tom, they selected the ones they thought sort of to give a really wide array of topics. So what else have we got? We've talked about the Labradoodle, the story of the Peruvian looters that found an ancient tomb. I mean, this is almost like because of the nature of the story, I mean, brilliant to listen to, but sort of even more magical, adventurous tale to tell with animation. We've got a mummy that was flown in the 70s from Egypt. Ramesses II, I'm sure Egyptologists will know all over the place, was flown to France to be restored. So this ancient mummy went on a flight, which I don't think would happen today. I think the restorers maybe should have traveled to Egypt.
Gone to Egypt, yeah, in hindsight, yeah.
And then what else have we got? When Brazil banned women from playing football. So it's a really good wide range of topics that actually just expresses how excellent Witness History is in its scope.
The little dogs in the Labradoodle one, the little animated puppies, yeah, were so cute.
Yeah.
It was so, so cute.
It's 1989 in Melbourne. Dog breeder Wally Conran is looking down at a litter of puppies. They're unlike anything he's seen before.
I went to our manager and I said, "We're going to have trouble with this." And he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, to be quite honest," I said, "I've opened a Pandora box and I've produced a Frankenstein monster."
Wally has been asked to create the perfect guide dog for a blind woman in Hawaii whose husband's allergic to long-haired dogs. It's been a tricky task, but after years of trying, he thinks he's finally cracked it.
We only got three in that first litter, and fortunately, one of the three, we tested the coat and the saliva and sent the results of those tests over to Hawaii to the lady's husband, and there was one in it, Sultan, he wasn't allergic to, and fortunately, that dog made a guide dog. But boy, did I go through some strife getting to that stage.
Apart from the financial cost then, AI often gets strong reactions and opinions. Because now you've explained it, it's using some AI and it's using some human animators. And I like that collaboration because we've got to learn to work alongside and with AI and let it create things, maybe create things that weren't possible before.
I will freely say to you, Georgie, I do remain, you know, cautious about AI and its sudden sort of arrival in daily life. I can see its absolute huge benefits in some of the work we do, but I'm very, very conscious that I want to work with humans, and I like giving creative people opportunities, and I like myself to write. And sometimes I joke, my key skills in life are saying things and writing things, so I'm done. AI's come for me already.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how I feel in terms of, you know, voiceovers and radio, and my son wants to be an animator. He's off to college to do game design and animation. And so he was very like, "Why are they using AI? This is going to put me out of a job."
Yeah, I understand.
And so I said I would ask this question on his behalf.
And I'm glad you have. And I would say to him, look, keep going, because what you've said is we want to get to a world where AI and humans work together. And we don't feel like this sort of cliche of the robots are coming for us kind of thing anymore. But we feel, I guess, how people would have felt with other technological developments, typewriters to keyboards and so on, you know, with the little Tippex thing. And, you know, that seems, but do you know, things have evolved to help us, not to hinder us.
I'd forgotten about Tippex.
Little strips. So, yeah. So I'm the first person to say, look, I want us to be careful. And we have in the BBC a brilliant team called the Responsible AI Unit. And if you ever have any questions about what I can and can't use or who I can or should not engage to do a piece of work, we talk to them and they absolutely were involved in this process. But there are things that are changing what we do, such as if we are to do visual and audio content, and we really want it, you know, two very different audiences. So one on the radio or one on a podcast feed, maybe someone on demand versus a live radio, or we want to use YouTube, or actually platforms like Spotify increasingly are offering up listeners a button where you can switch to the video feed. If those feeds don't match, you're going to see jump cuts. It's going to be scratchy. It's going to be an unappealing experience. It won't really work. Some AI tools are helping editing so that the audio edit and the video edit in like perfectly match. Now, there's still rough edges to smooth out in terms of that kind of software. But I think if you're going to make that journalism exists, or you've already decided to commission that piece of radio, what we're doing now is using an AI tool to ensure that we can give it another lease of life or another route to market elsewhere. But I would definitely not want to be doing that if it meant your son didn't get work as an animator in 5-10 years time. So we do need to be careful, and that's why we have done this really as a pilot, to see how it gives Witness History a new area to reach an audience and a fun expression of some stories that had otherwise only ever been audio. I'm alive to the dangers as well, for sure.
Have you had any audience response, any reaction to these 5 YouTube animations?
I think people are intrigued, and I think found that certainly the DC Comics one, because it was sort of relevant to the story, sort of found that quite fun rendition of Jeanette Khan's story. The visual pods that do the biggest numbers are actually the ones we've carefully curated a lovely visual studio with a shelf and some good lighting. But where people can see who's talking. And I think in an age of misinformation, disinformation, people do like to, even if it's fleeting, see who they're hearing from. Or they're just fascinated. Because when we listen to people, we build up a mental image of that presenter. Sometimes, I'm sure you've had it too, when you finally see a radio presenter, you're like, oh no, you're not who I've imagined.
I wish I had a pound for every time someone said, you're not how I imagined you'd be. And you think, no, I don't want to delve into that any further. No, okay. You think, no, I'm not going to ask.
There's 2 ways to go with that. It's nice to give people authenticity and reality and a feeling of closeness to the presenter. But I also do quite like the myth of radio. When I was about 22, my first job in the radio, when I was in Yorkshire on a small radio station, some children came in, a school trip sort of thing, and they were given a little tour, and they came up to my desk. And the person giving the tour said, this is Anna, she reads the news. And the children were so disappointed that I was like quite young and a bit sort of closer to them than they'd imagined. Yeah. They wanted a newsreader to be an older, more sensible person than I looked at age 22. So do you remember that moment? Oh, right. People have a mental image of they've heard your voice and they expect this.
What do you see as the future of visualization and audio of podcasts? Because it's not going away and we seem to be consuming it more and more. And there is this whole debate, well, what's telly and what's the visualization of audio? Where do you see the future going?
What's wonderful is the sort of companionship that audio seems to create for us all, you know, irrespective of age. The boom in podcasts has really shown that people like this feeling of switching on people that they feel familiar with, talking about something they're interested in, wherever they are on a journey, doing the dishes, going for a jog. That companion feeling that we've always known radio delivers is not something that's died out. You know, when we think of radio and linear listening dropping off because, it's a thing of the past, it's not. The feeling it gives you is not a thing of the past. It's clearly still a sort of a way people want to consume information. The visual element's really interesting because through the evolution of social media over the 10, 15, 20 years now, it's all gone in the visual direction, hasn't it? You know, short form video, sharing Facebook itself. I've been sort of pondering how you get audio to go viral or to be shared for about 10 years easily. And it's an interesting outcome, really, that the way that audio becomes widely shared is actually to make it visual at this point in time.
There seems an irony about that somehow, doesn't there?
Yeah. So I think the future immediately, who knows, you know, how AI will influence sort of the longer term future, but the medium term future, I think this sense that there's a piece of content, the journalism in our, speaking from my area, is something that we can, you know, make sure people feel is really well researched, really truthful, really trusted, and hopefully really fascinating. You can take that media with you. So you start off with it in your headphones because you're on the bus. As you go through your door to your home, it might be that you can choose, because you're now in your living room, to flick to visual mode, and then you'll see it, or you, maybe not a TV at this point, might be a different kind of lens or screen. So media doesn't have to stay in one format. It will match what you're doing. So as you move about, it will change. That's, I think, how, I guess, Spotify is developing this sort of flick to visual, flick back to audio sort of functionality, which is really interesting, that people's habits and what they're doing is influencing the format. So your behavior, where you are, whether you're in public, whether you're on your own, whether you're trying to get to sleep, whether you're trying to wake up, that's how the same journalism, the same media moves to your behavior. I think that's possibly where we're going. And I hope that that gives us lots of fun opportunities to try lots of things with great journalism.
A big thank you to Anna Doble from BBC World Service. You can find the animated Witness History stories on the World Service YouTube channel. Our next Foot in the Door event is in Liverpool on the 5th of May. Leanne Campbell from BBC Radio Merseyside has been confirmed as a guest speaker. You can go to our website audioacademy.org.uk and click on events to find out more and buy tickets. Please like and subscribe to the Audio Academy podcast wherever you get your pods. And if you have time to give us a quick review, we'd be so grateful. I'll see you next week.